Welcome to the Single Greatest Choice podcast, where single women find support, empowerment, information, and inspiration around the topics of singleness, fertility, motherhood, and mindset. I'm your host, Katie B., and I'm thrilled to be back for a second season to share more stories of women like you and me who are navigating these choices, along with interviews with experts in the fields of fertility preservation, coaching, and psychology. Whether you're just starting to question what to do about your finite fertility, or whether you're ready to make the leap into solo motherhood by choice, I hope these conversations will help you to feel more supported and confident along the way. Because whatever you decide to do with these years could be the single greatest choice you'll ever make, and you don't have to make it alone. Hi, listeners. My guest this week is Heather. Heather is a single mom by chance to a preteen boy, and a single mom by choice to a baby girl. She shares the differences in those two experiences, as well as the joys and struggles of parenting solo. Heather is positive and real about her unconventional path to motherhood. You can find her on Instagram at momversuswild, and watch out for her new blog, momversuswild.com, full of tips and tricks for single motherhood, coming whenever this busy mama of two finds time to make it happen. Thanks for listening, and I hope you enjoyed this conversation with Heather. Hi, Heather. Welcome to the Single Greatest Choice podcast.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
I'm so glad to have you here too. You're someone that I reached out to last season because I was really interested in your story, and we never managed to make it happen. So I'm thrilled to have you here for season two.
Yes.
I know that in this space, women are often comparing the experience of having a child as part of a partnership and then having a child as a single mother by choice. And you are someone who has both of those experiences. So I think that it would just be very helpful for our audience to kind of hear you process through what it's been like and the pros and cons of each and just share your story with us. So feel free to start wherever you want and just tell us about you and tell us your story.
So a little bit about me. A long time ago, I started out with a career in the performing arts. So I was a singer and dancer. I worked for the Walt Disney Company, and I had this fantastic 10-year career where I lived all over the place. I lived in Orlando and Tokyo and New York, and I did tours of the United States. I had this very nomadic lifestyle. And then after about 10 years of doing that, I really felt like settling down. So I planted roots in the Midwest. I knew exactly what I wanted. I wanted to get married and have a child and have a family. And I had this perfect traditional picture of what that looked like. And so I set about doing that. I met someone, we got married, I got pregnant, I had my son, and very quickly, the marriage deteriorated. And by the time my son was 1 year old, I was filing for divorce. So that was a situation that I just never really wanted to be in again. It was stressful and not anything I wanted to do a second time. So I knew that I wanted more children. I loved my son I loved him before he existed. As soon as I saw him, I was like, I'm doing this again. I'm having more kids. That's what I wanted. I wanted to be a mom. I went out and I thought, okay, it didn't work the first time, but you know, I'll find the right person and I'll make this work again. That ended up being a lot more challenging than I thought it was going to be. I kind of thought I can get along with anybody and I'll just meet someone. But it was a lot more complicated, especially having a child already. I think I had sort of a vision of how I liked to parent, and I had a vision of what everything was going to be like. And it was really difficult to take two people and merge those visions together, especially when you're kind of already attached to how you do things. The more I went on too, the older I got and the older my son got, the more it became that we had such a routine and we were like two peas in a pod as he was growing up. It almost became even more difficult because I didn't really want someone to come into that duo that we had and change anything because it was just so awesome. Mm-hmm. And my son is just my best little buddy still. He's 12 now and he's just the kindest, sweetest, most wonderful human ever. So I guess things have worked out. It was probably like 2014 that I asked my OBGYN, how long do I have until I need to find Mr. Right? I guess I was about to turn 35. So I asked my OBGYN and she said, I don't know, maybe like 2 years. And I just felt this feeling of panic. Like, what do you mean? I have to find someone and marry them and get and make sure it's working before we have any babies. And I felt like that timeline was just maybe the worst thing I could have ever heard. I was hoping she would say like, oh, no, you have plenty of, just tell me plenty of time. That's better. I think it was at that appointment that I said, what if I don't find someone? Like, should I look into, I mean, I was putting it as a question to her, but should I look into just having one on my own? And she said, well, of course, that's a decision you would have to make, but I can give you a paper with fertility clinics and things that you can do. And so I took that paper and I folded it up and I put it in my underwear drawer and I just packed it away and it sat there. So I went on and still thought, okay, I've got my 2 years. Actually, I dated someone for about 2 years. It was a long distance relationship. So we very rarely actually saw each other. He was from Florida, someone I knew from like 20 years ago in my past. And it was very nice to reconnect and all of that. But I don't live in Florida anymore. And so it was not something I couldn't move. He couldn't move. And we just kind of thought, okay, this isn't really going anywhere. And it certainly wasn't going in the direction that I was hoping things would go because obviously I wanted more children. Mm-hmm. And I think it was at that point that I kind of decided I'm so much more interested in just having more children than even the relationship. I kind of was putting that pressure on every relationship or potential relationship that there could have been. Everything was about this path to having a bigger family and having more kids. And that's, I think, when I realized, you know what, you don't want a relationship right now, at least. That's not even really what you want. You just want to have another child. So I had this bravery from having been a single mother for almost a decade. I was 38, turning 39. It was just a matter of taking that paper out of my underwear drawer and making some phone calls. I started calling some of the phone numbers to just see, how does this work? How do you do health insurance? What's covered? How do you pay for all of these things? I went in and I found out that you have to do lots of groundwork. You have to get tests and find out if your body is working in the right way, if you have eggs left at 38 or 39. So there were a lot of things that I found out I needed to do just to even find out if it was a possibility. I don't even think I mentioned anything to anyone at first. I have a few friends that I mentioned it to later after I was kind of in the process. I really just kind of wanted to see whether it was even a possibility. I found a fertility clinic and I started going there and did some of the tests to see if my fallopian tubes were open and see if I had some eggs, and everything actually looked pretty good that I would be able to go forward. I feel like the fertility clinic, they give you a nice folder with all of the information that you need, where to buy your sperm. And all of it was just so fascinating. I used one of the bigger sperm banks, and I felt like I was on the Tinder of sperm donors.
Totally. Looking
at like, I can only imagine myself having a son because I kept looking at the baby pictures of like all of these donors. So I pictured my child looking like all of these different guys. And all I could think is, oh, okay, well, I want my son to be tall and I want to. And of course, I had a daughter. So I don't know if I was going about everything the right way, but I actually thought, I mean, it was kind of fun in a way. It was weird and fun to kind of go through the database and filter out the different results and things that maybe I might be looking for. I don't even know if I really had ever thought about any of that before, because when you're thinking about a relationship as, you know, finding a partner, you're really just looking for your partner. You're not looking for what qualities do I want in my child.
Right.
So, I mean, that was an interesting process to go through. And I recruited some friends to look at pictures and read bios and say, this person sounds pretty normal. Like, what do you think? Yeah, I think so. And there was all of the silliness that was involved, but obviously there was like the health things and genetic screenings and things that really, it could be really overwhelming. So I tried to just keep it light and focus on, if you were going to go meet someone and have a child, you wouldn't be quite as picky as you're being right now. So I tried to just be a little bit more relaxed about the whole thing and not get too like into the weeds with the genetic information and all of that. I tried to have fun with the process. The method that I used was the IUI. And well, I conceived on my very first IUI. That was an interesting one because I called to find out my HCG? HCG. And I had already taken a pregnancy test because that's what we do. And I knew that the line was getting darker. I knew I was pregnant already. And so I called and they said, well, congratulations. You're kind of pregnant. And I was like, I'm pretty sure, no, you can't be kind of pregnant. But apparently you can be kind of pregnant because there's like a certain number. I think it's like under 20 or something. You're not pregnant. And then over 30, you are, but there's like 20 to 30 where maybe you're pregnant. Maybe you're not.
I had the exact same experience. My first IUI where I was like, wait, I thought this was a yes or no question, yes. But it was the same thing. It was like the HCG, it was a chemical pregnancy. So the HCG was like not quite high enough to call it, but something was happening. Mm-hmm. Just wasn't sure what.
I did not know that was a thing. And yes, so they said, it looks like it's a chemical pregnancy. And I was taking like the progesterone and all of that stuff to try and hold on to the pregnancy, which with my son, I had had miscarriages before him as well. And so I took progesterone for the first 10 or 12 weeks with my son. So I knew that was something I would probably do with any subsequent pregnancy to try and make sure everything stuck. So actually, even though it was a chemical pregnancy, it kind of drug on for a few weeks. It took a little while. At some point they said, your HGC is still going up, but it's not doubling. And then a couple days later, it was still going up, but still not doubling. And then it still was going up. And I was starting to think, oh, great. It's going to be an ectopic pregnancy. I don't even know what I'm going to do. This could be life-threatening. You just go through all of the possibilities of horrible things that could go wrong. Finally, they said, well, just don't take any progesterone. Just try to let nature take its course. We don't think it's ectopic, but if you get any severe pain, go to the hospital. And it wasn't. Everything was fine. It was just a chemical pregnancy miscarriage. So I tried again. I waited like one cycle. I tried again with another IUI, then a third IUI. And then on the fourth IUI, I conceived again. And the numbers were all different. They were doubling. Everything was looking good. And I still felt that panic, like something could go wrong because I had had a miscarriage. I had a later miscarriage in the past. And so I think for me with my son and with this pregnancy, I felt panicked, but obviously nothing went wrong. Everything worked out and I am about to have a one-year-old. It was a great process. You asked about the differences between partnered.
Yeah, I definitely want to get into that.
Not partnered. So with my first child, I did have a partner and this time around, I did not. However, I had supportive friends and I had my parents who live very close to me and are just wonderful, supportive people. It was more important that I just had a support system. If something went wrong, do I have someone to call, talk to, maybe come to an appointment with me? For the actual birth, I had a good friend who said, I absolutely will come and help you through your birth. And she went to the classes with me. And my backup was my mom. My friend got sick on the day that I was scheduled to be induced. And she felt like she had the flu. She was coughing. She could not come. So my mom came as a backup. In some ways, I'm glad that my mom was there because there was this really special bonding experience. I thought she couldn't handle it. She did a great job and she just held my hand. And I remember just looking over and being like, my mom's here. I'll be okay.
Yeah.
Everything will be okay. My mom's with me. even though she's not like the best of labor coaches, it was my mom. So I felt really safe and secure. Having my mom there, I think, was much better than my first experience.
Mm-hmm.
I would hands down love to have my mom with me at all times. So
yeah, I've noticed as well. So this is my first pregnancy. I had the chemical that I mentioned, and then I also had an early miscarriage, but this is the first one that feels like it's going to result in a baby. And I have really, really enjoyed my family's involvement. And I know that I'm very blessed to have a family that wants to be involved and that I want them there, you know, because I know not everybody has that kind of family.
Right.
But, you know, my sister came with me to my 20-week ultrasound, and it was not at all because I felt like I needed someone there. I would have been totally fine. In fact, because I've done this all alone, it feels bizarre to me when people ask like, oh, do you have someone to come to your appointment? I'm like, no, I don't take anyone to the dentist either. Like, it just, this doesn't feel like a thing where I need someone with me, but I guess a lot of, you know, couples have that experience. But, you know, my sister came because she wanted to, and she wanted to see the ultrasound, not necessarily because I was feeling like I needed the support. And so that's really fun. I'm not sure if they would feel the same kind of entitlement to be a part of the process if I had a partner. Like, they might think that they were encroaching on our experience. I think it's a huge benefit because I'm aware that, of course, we would all love to have the ideal partner who's like totally supportive and says all the right things, but that's not the partner I would have had.
I think you kind of hit the nail on the head there. There is an expectation when you have a partner that that person is going to be equally as excited and engaged and thrilled as you are and have sort of this matching energy. The more that I'm talking to other women too, it seems like it's very rarely the case. Even when I was just a divorced single mom sharing custody, at that time, I remember talking to other women who said, I'm really kind of a single mom too. And I thought, what do you mean? You're married, your husband's there. And, you know, some of my friends would say, well, just because my husband is there doesn't mean he's helping me with anything that the children are doing. It doesn't mean he's ever changed a diaper. And while, yes, of course, there are guys out there that do those things, you know, there are definitely cases where you have a person who really isn't interested in helping and isn't as engaged as you are.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that is disappointing. I think having expectations that aren't met sometimes is much worse emotionally than just having no expectations at all and going, okay, things could go any way. So let's just see. Being unpartnered, you have less expectations. You don't even expect anybody to come help you. If anyone does help you, you're a little bit like, wow, that's amazing. Thank you. Great. I can take a shower without worrying about my child and what they're doing.
Right. You know, there is this starting point of where my grief begins with, oh, wow, I really wish I could be doing this with a partner and sharing this experience. But at a certain point, I feel like that sadness that I may have kind of meets up with the sadness that partnered women sometimes have, where even though that person is physically present, we both have that margin of grief around, this doesn't look the way I thought it would.
Yeah.
And so that kind of has helped me. And I don't feel a lot of grief anymore, but it was certainly something that I needed to process through to get to this point of being ready to be pregnant. And it really helped to acknowledge that a good chunk of what felt hard for me was something that was also shared by a lot of my coupled friends, that having a partner didn't just make that go away. That one of the questions I would like to ask you is, you mentioned post-divorce and dating in those years when you were trying to find husband number two to have a child with, because I get this question a lot from women, and obviously I'm not there yet, but what did dating look like for you? And how do you think already being a mom changed dating for you?
Oh, that's a really good question. I can't say I love dating. I feel like after 10 years of doing that post-divorce, I'm really like over it. So I had a shared custody situation, which made dating very possible. I had time where I was alone and feeling lonely and wanting to share my time with someone. So there was definitely a desire to go find a partner. So I would date when my child was not with me. Whenever he was at his father's house, I was so protective of my son and not wanting to waste any of my time with him. I really don't think I ever had a babysitter or left or went on a date or anything like that when he was with me. Mm-hmm. So I made sure to schedule any time with someone else for weekends or days when my son was not with me. So that worked. And I can say, I almost don't know how dating would work for me now. With my daughter, I have her 100% of the time, 24 hours a day, 7 days mm-hmm. a week. So if I did want to go on a date, I would probably have to get a babysitter or get my parents or something like that to watch her. And I have not done that yet. Obviously, the world in 2020 has not really
been. This has not been the year for dating.
I'm not going on any dates anytime soon. My gynecologist asked me that. She was like, so have you started dating? And I said, you've got to be kidding me. I'm a brand new mother and there's a pandemic. Like, what would I be going on a date for? Like, seriously? So I don't know what that would look like for this scenario. It's a little different scenario because with my son, I had a lot of alone time. I did a lot of things to keep myself busy. I went back to school. I got a degree. I got another degree. I stayed very busy and I scheduled all of those things somehow whenever he was not with me. So my life then was more about trying to fill up the time when I was a mom, but didn't have any children around. Mm-hmm. And I will say that that was really, really hard. Having your child there and being a mother and doing everything for your child, cooking and cleaning and washing their clothes and talking to them and taking care of them. And then the next day, nothing. Like you don't even hear the sound of their voice.
Yeah, that seems very disorienting.
It was. And I always felt like I had this little bit of a, wait, I'm a mom. Am I a mom? Am I a part-time mom? Am I like half a mom? Like there was all this labeling that I kind of would play through in my mind. And I think I did. I called myself that to my friends. I was like, well, I'm like a part-time mom because sometimes I have my child. Sometimes I'm just like, I guess I'll go walk around the mall and get a pedicure. And
right.
I don't know.
And probably your friends that were full-time, you know, quote unquote, full-time moms were probably pretty envious.
They're like, why are you unhappy with this scenario?
Right. Yeah. So now that you are quote unquote, full-time momming, do you ever miss that time? Do you ever wish there was someone that was coming to take her 50% of the time?
You know, for the very first time, I think since she has been born, I took her over to my parents' house and said, will you just watch her for 4 hours so I can clean my house? I do all of my cleaning. I get the children to bed and then I'm like cleaning a toilet at midnight mm-hmm. going, what is happening? Like, I'm so tired, but there are these things that have to get done and I can't do them when she's awake because she's like climbing all over me and like licking the toilet. Like, I don't,
right.
I can't. So that was the first time that I've even really done that where I've thought I need a stretch of time to mm-hmm. get some stuff done for myself, which isn't work. And it isn't, I guess it kind of is for the kids to keep, you want to keep your house clean for your children.
Right,
that's
right.
Kind of a goal. But yeah, that was the first time I've really taken a chunk.
I can't believe you made it a year before I pulled the trigger on actually getting pregnant. I had several conversations with my family where I was like, okay, for real, guys, like I'm talking, we're going to make a spreadsheet. Like, when are you here? When are you coming? When are you going to help? Because this, in my mind, is the family's baby. A big part of why I chose to move forward with this at this time is because I can see how ready that the whole family is. So I'm one of three girls. And one sister does have a daughter who's 7 and she actually is pregnant right now again, which was a total surprise to everyone. It was not intentional, but you know, it's exciting. Uh-huh. But for years, we kind of thought her one daughter was the only grandchild. And so she would have a soccer game and there'd be 9 adults showing up to watch this one child. Oh. So I could just see that, you know, our family had plenty of love to love another kid. And so I really did go into this with the mindset of like, okay, I'm the vessel, like I'm giving birth to this child. And of course I'm the primary caregiver and I'm the parent and I make all of the mm-hmm. big decisions and everything. But like my intention is not to be 24/7 all of the time. So, and this was unexpected, but my dad actually ended up buying a house. I live in a neighborhood where there are like real tiny, the houses are about 1,000 square feet or smaller. And my dad bought a home a street away from me. We kind of jokingly call it the guest house, just so the family can come and stay and not be in my tiny house. They have another tiny house where they can come. Yeah. If you don't have that support system, I just don't know how people do it. Seems hard.
It's funny that you say that, because I don't know that I went into it thinking that. And my parents are very helpful. They're very involved with my son. They've always been there. I work a lot, so they're there to pick him up from school. Sometimes they would drop him off for school. And I really didn't want to burden them. Mm-hmm. So several years ago, I remember saying, probably around the same time that I asked my gynecologist, like, hey, should I be looking at just having one by myself? I think I mentioned dinner with my parents. You know, I could just have a child by myself. And my father was like, I am not watching any more children. There is enough work here with just this one child.
Uh-huh.
No. And so I probably would have maybe pulled the trigger earlier had my father not had that reaction. And I remember talking to my mom and being like, Dad sure is not going to be helping out. If I was to do anything, I'm going to have to get a really good daycare. I think I have to make more money. I have to figure something different out than relying on you guys for childcare. And I will say, as soon as I got up the courage to say I was pregnant to my mom and dad, and I sat down and I said, you know what I've always wanted, and you know that my path in life, and I've always wanted more children. And so I decided to have another child on my own. And my dad was like, just blank expression. And I was like, and I'm pregnant. I hope you'll be supportive of that. And my father just kept his blank expression. And he was like, I just worry about you. And he just said it like in this way that he was just like, God, I hope you know what you're doing. Uh-huh. And I just started in with, well, I work for a wonderful company. They will pay for portions of daycare. You don't have to worry about anything. You have to worry about nothing. And throughout my pregnancy, I get that like hyperemesis, horrible, horrible sickness. It was bad. It was bad from like 6 weeks, and I was still throwing up on the delivery table.
Ugh.
So I was very sick, and my parents jumped in. They were so there for me.
Mm-hmm.
I was so worried about my dad and like how his reaction was going to be to everything. He has not put this child down. He carries her around. He does everything for her. He's her favorite. All she says is, she calls him Pop. She just started talking in the last month, and all she says is pop, 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 pop.
That's a pretty familiar story that I've heard from a lot of women, of grandparents being skeptical about hypothetical grandchildren and then just number one fan of the actual child. Like once the kid gets there, it's all bets are off. Yeah. And I get it because, you know, you're his baby, and just like you want the best for your son and your daughter, and you don't want them to take on things that they can't handle, and you know, all of the things. He was just protecting you. Now you've produced one of his other favorite humans, so you're off the hook.
Yes. He's the number one fan. And it's funny because my daughter, I think that he's her favorite person. She wakes up at like 3 a.m. and is like, Pop.
Oh, like, that's so sweet.
At his house. I've had such a great experience with their support. Even though I was super uncertain when I started out, like what that was going to look like. Mm-hmm. And I had every intention of, hey, I'm going to find a really great daycare. I did lots of research. I had picked one out. And she was born in January. And by March, the whole world had shut down. As it turns out, I really relied on my parents for watching her while I was working. There is no way that I could have worked and taken care of.
Oh yeah.
Three, I don't four, know five. How,
yeah.
No,
definitely not.
There was no possible way. So they come over to my house. Sometimes we go over to their house and I'll find a little corner of wherever I need to be. And my 12-year-old is doing the virtual schooling. Somehow though, it's just kind of amazing how it all worked out so well. We've all just been kind of in our little bubble of quarantining and all of that together. And it's just kind of amazing. I didn't foresee it working out as well as it has.
That's great to hear. I'm curious about how your son's process has been. Has he taken to having a sibling? Like what has that been for him?
He's fantastic. Well, one, I would say have a preteen in your house so that you can take a shower, because right. I put her in the pack and play and he can read her stories and do puppet shows while I take a nice long shower. And he's totally happy to do that. He was fantastic from day one. He was smiling and happy and excited. He's never said anything about like, I miss when it was just you and me and we could play like a board game in silence or anything like mm-hmm. that. I let him stay up a little later at night so that when she goes to bed, he and I can like watch a YouTube thing that he wants me to see or play a game or something like that. So we'll do things like that together so that he still gets a little of personal time, but he hasn't had a single moment where he's missed the past life. Mm-hmm. And we did a lot together. I think for a few years, because I used to work for Disney, I love going down to Orlando. So I had annual passes for he and I at Disney. And we would like go down for a weekend to Disney and come back. And we were like these little jet setting buddies that would just go do all kinds of fun stuff. And we have not done any of that in the past 2 years. Like the whole time I was pregnant, I wasn't mm-hmm. going anywhere. I wasn't doing anything other than laying around. And then the last year
COVID
that my daughter's been yeah. here, right, I haven't gone anywhere. So he really hasn't even said that he misses any of that. I think he's just enjoying being a brother and mm-hmm. watching her be silly. And I think he's just kind of thought this whole watching a little person grow up has been fun and exciting. So mm-hmm.
you've really kind of nailed this timing of getting to enjoy having an only child and getting to enjoy watching siblings interact and grow up together. I think about that. I'm having a son in April, and I do love the idea of, like you said, just being a little duo and doing things together and kind of having our own little world. And so when I think about having a second child, which is also very appealing to me, I think uh-huh. about already it feels like that kid is hypothetical and my son is real, you know? And like, yeah. do I want to yeah. like, what would be best for my son? Do I want to keep just the two of us, or do I want that second child? And I don't have the luxury because of age mm-hmm. to have that big of a gap between. So I have to kind of make a decision pretty quickly, and I'm not putting a lot of pressure on myself, but I do have embryos remaining from with the same donor. The way my work works, there's like kind of a time of year that's best for me to have a baby. And so I don't see myself doing a transfer like 3 months after this one's born. So it'll either okay. be like a year and 3 months, I'll consider it. And then if I don't do it, yeah. then like 2 years and three. And then if I don't, at that point, I'm like, I probably don't want to have a kid. Cause at that point, I think I'd be like 44 by the time the kid was okay. born. So that's kind of the end of it for me. So, but
it's yeah. funny that we have to think like that.
I know.
Like you have to plan everything so in advance, and especially once you have that darn age factor.
Totally.
Because it gets scary.
Yeah. I remember when I realized when my parents were my age, I was 15. And that really freaked me out to realize like I'm starting so much later than they did. But, you know, yeah.
It is what it is.
You can't do anything about. I feel
young. I've done the same thing. In fact, my son does that too. He'll say, Mom, when she's my age, I'm going to be 22. And he gets so upset because he's mm-hmm. like, wait a second, I'm not going to actually like be there growing up with her. By the time she's six, he'll be graduating from high school.
I haven't really thought about that end of it, that you kind of will get to have that only child experience again on the other end, where when you're shopping for prom dresses with her, or like that she will kind of again be an only child. So yes. that's neat. You sort of get that with both kids.
I get the beginning and the end there. There's part of me that I would love to do this again, mm-hmm. but I'm pretty sure that I'm not. My gynecologist asked at my last appointment, I have a cyst on my ovary, and she looked at it and she was like, I don't know, something looks different. I want to send you to another doctor, to a specialist. So I went to a hospital and I had an ultrasound of my ovary again, like a more in-depth one. And then it got sent to another radiologist. They don't think it's cancer. there's always the possibility if there's like something growing inside of you that it could possibly be cancerous, and they can't always tell, but they want it to come out right away and they want to take my whole ovary. And of course, as soon as they said that, I was like, wait, but
I might not be done with that.
But how do we know I don't need that ovary? And she said, right. you'll be fine with just one ovary. But I had that feeling of panic. Like, that was the ovary that my children came from. I'm certain. I know that my daughter came from that ovary because I watched it. I watched it pop out. So I'm like very protective of my ovary here. And she's like, well, you have the other ovary. You're going to be okay. And she had asked me, do you want me to just tie your tubes while we're doing this too? And I was like, no, why would I want you to tie my tubes? And she said, well, are you going to have more children? And I said, probably not. And she said, so do you want me to tie your tubes? And I was like, no, because we're leaving that option open.
Right. And also if you're single, there's not a whole lot of danger of sperm getting up that tube, you know, it's not.
I don't even leave my house. I don't think right. we have to worry about anything. So yeah, I think just having that conversation though with her, like made me think about, oh no, do I want to do this one more time? And I really don't, because of the pregnancy sickness, that is very fresh in my mind, spending almost an entire year feeling so ridiculously horrible. Mm-hmm. I cannot believe how horrible I felt. And my birth wasn't easy. Getting her out was also not an easy process. In fact, my gynecologist was like, we have to talk about a C-section. If you ever want to do that again, you're not having a vaginal birth.
Wow.
It's not. So my daughter had, it's called shoulder dystocia. Their shoulders get stuck in your pelvis, which I didn't even really know was a thing. And she came out, she got out, everything was okay. But I didn't see her for a while because they were checking her for nerve damage and checking her for oxygen deprivation and things like that. I kind of just feel like maybe this is my last child. But of course, then as soon as they say they want to take your ovary out, you're like, wait, I might still want that. I don't know.
I think there's real grief that probably every woman who has ever had a desire to be a mother, whether or not they've actually had children or not, you don't hear it talked about as much. And maybe it's because we're not quite in that age bracket. Like maybe women slightly older than us are talking about it more. I mean, you hear about menopause and, you know, kind of just reaching that point in life where you're no longer able to have children. And you hear about all the physical symptoms, like the hot flashes and, you know, the things that make it physically uncomfortable and miserable.
Yeah.
But I think too, you know, we spend our whole lives daydreaming about how many kids you're going to have and boys or girls and what are their names going to be. And to be at a point where you realize, okay, this is it. This is what my family looks like. Whether you have one child or six kids or, you know, whatever that looks like, having that potential go away, kind of have to process and grieve that, even if you would have been done anyway.
Yeah.
It's nice to know. And that is why I'm such an advocate for egg freezing and getting your fertility checked and all of that, because I wasn't sure what my family planning was going to end up looking like when I realized, oh, I'm late 30s and single. I didn't necessarily know for sure that I wanted to be a single mother by choice, but I started by freezing eggs because I just didn't want the reason I didn't have kids to be because I physically couldn't. And so it really took getting eggs frozen and creating embryos and all of that. And then I took a 6-month break to really think about, okay, now it's not a matter of, can I, now it gets to be, I have the luxury of having it be an issue of like, do I want this? And I could have waited longer. And like I said earlier, I mean, I think a lot of my motivation for doing it when I did had more to do with my family. You know, I feel the biological clock pressure, but less so now that I have frozen eggs and embryos. But I was looking at my parents and thinking, if I wait another year, I mean, I hope my parents are around for another, you know, 20 years, but if I wait a year, then that's 19 that they get with my kid. And, you know, even best case scenario, I'm shortening the amount of time my family gets to be with my child. So that's what really like tipped it over the edge. But yeah, I can definitely see that having someone try to take your ovary before you are sure you're done with it. You know, it's like, wait, no, wait, I might be using that.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
That's a good point that you brought up too about your parents and your family, because I've thought about that a lot. My mom and dad are both 75. And so they've thought about it. I've thought about it. And every once in a while, we're all like have tears running down our face. My mom says, I want to be here to watch her grow up. And I'm like, you will, you will, you will. But none of us ever know any of those things. And I think that's another big part. You have to face time whether we want it to be a real factor or not, we could freeze our eggs and hold on to them. And that makes you feel a little better. But then there's always all these other timelines that mm-hmm. come into play, like your parents.
Or even my own children. I mean, the fact that I'm going to be so much older for my child than my parents are for me. I mean, it's amazing that I'm almost 40 and my parents are still in their mid 60s, able to really, really help me with childcare. Whereas like if my son waits till he's 40 and then wants me to babysit, I'm like, I mean, I may be out of commission at that point. I'd be a lot older.
I know. And I worry about that with my parents too. I mean, them being 75 and they are so exhausted at the end of the day. And I'm like, I get it.
Yeah.
I don't even have the energy. So I think at least thank goodness there's my mom and dad. So they can kind of take turns.
And I think too, it does help to keep them young. You know, I mean, I think the number of times my dad's going to like crouch down on the floor to pick up my child, functional motor movement, like you need that because otherwise you'd probably be sitting on the couch. So,
which also makes a really strong selling point when you're trying to convince them to come help more.
Yes. It will make you younger. It's the fountain of youth.
Yes. Yeah.
I don't want to take up too much of your time. I know we're both in the middle of our work days, but is there anything that we haven't talked about that you want to make sure that we talk about or any like words of wisdom that you want to pass on to other women maybe considering single motherhood?
I think my words of wisdom would be don't think that you can't do this. And don't be afraid. If you feel a calling to become a mom or to have more children because that is what you really feel compelled to do, don't be afraid and think that it's something that isn't for you or that you can't do. Because I really feel that once you have your child there with you, you figure it out and you make it work. Mm-hmm. I was very scared. I think even though I was already a single mom, I was scared to become a single mom that didn't have the weekends off ever. And am I going to have the energy? And you find it mm-hmm. and you make it happen and you figure out how to get a hot shower, even though no one else is around.
Right.
You figure out the safe place to put your baby so that you can make dinner. All of those things you just figure out, you learn it on the job. So don't ever let fear or thinking that you're not capable stop you from making your dreams come true. I mean, I put it off for several years. I probably could have done this like 5 years ago, but I'm doing it now. I'm a little older and my joints kind of hurt when I'm like bending over and crawling, but I am so happy and I have zero doubts throughout this entire thing. I feel like I brought a wonderful new person into my family. Everyone loves her and it was 100% the best and most wonderful choice that I made. Definitely the best choice. Yeah.
Yes. Yes. And you're such a good example of that resiliency and your ability to make it through things that seem really hard because your first experience of being a single mom was not by choice. And it was not something that you would have probably like if you'd known, hey, we're going to be married for about a year after this kid is born, like that might not have been a decision you would have made.
And then you're going to have to go out and get a new job and figure out how to I think that scenario was harder than this scenario. This was like a peaceful decision.
Well, you were in control here. I mean, you consciously made this decision. So even though it's hard, you knew what you were signing up for. No. And you knew the joys already of being a mom. So that's encouraging to me that you did it once and you spent most of that time parenting single and it was good enough that you wanted to do it again.
It was wonderful. Every day with my son has been a joy. Like literally every day, even when he was having like temper tantrums at like 2, I think I was still that mother that was like smiling and like, look at him just melting down there. Just adorable right in the middle of the mall.
And those are honestly the moments that I feel like will be easier for me to handle alone than with a partner, because I could see myself looking to a partner and being like, do something or like, why aren't you like, you're making it worse. But when it's just me, I just feel like I have this capacity for patience and kind of allow my child the space that he needs when there's not someone else with their opinions and their parenting style and all of that. So I thought this was a plan B. And now that I'm in it, I'm like, oh, thank God I'm doing it this way. This is exponentially better for me personally. I just think I'm going to thrive as a single mom and I'm excited to date at some point. I don't know when, but more for me than like, I don't feel like I need a co-parent.
I prefer not having a co-parent. Mm-hmm. I really like the experience that I've had. This has been, for being having a new baby and like being a new mom, it has been the most peaceful and gentle year. Mm-hmm. Because if I don't feel like cleaning the house, I don't clean it. And no one's saying, hey, you really need to clean that. There's none of that. Mm-hmm. Any pressure is only from myself. It's just been peaceful. And I do things the way that I feel like they should be done. Maybe it's not the right. I don't think there's any right or wrong way.
Right.
But yeah, there's no pressure. There's no other person coming in with their opinions. It's just me and having this really peaceful experience. I would say that's been the biggest difference. It's been peaceful and all the joys. I get to experience all of the joys without any of the stress. There are stressful moments.
Right. It's different.
Yeah. Your child's waking up at 4 a.m. and you're just really tired. Yeah, I just done things the way that I feel they should be done. And it's been super peaceful.
That's amazing. Yeah. Well, thank you so much for sharing your story. I know that it's going to touch people. And who knows, like maybe there are some listeners who have child number one from a past relationship and they're starting to kind of think about number two, and maybe your story will be what helps them take that leap. So I so appreciate you being open. And if people want to connect with you, is there a good way to do that?
Yes, I am on Instagram. I think my handle is Mom Versus Wild, written out versus, not the VS. So that is a good way. And if you follow me on Instagram, I have been working on a blog that I just haven't launched yet. It's also going to be momversuswild.com. You'll just, if you go there right now, you'll probably just see like a construction page, but soon I'm hoping I'll actually launch it with all kinds of things that have just helped me out being a single mother. I wanted to put like tips and tricks out there of products that I found that have helped me. It's just simple things like how to take a shower when you don't have anyone else around. Like right. How do you a really long, peaceful shower? That's like my number one thing in a day. I found all of those tips and tricks. And so hopefully I'll share those once the blog is launched.
Great. Well, I will link your Instagram and website in the show notes. And then once you've got that stuff up, then people can find it easily. Maybe they're listening to this in the future and that information will be there for them.
Awesome.
Thank you so much. Thank you. Great to talk with you, Heather.
Bye.
Thank you for joining me for this episode of the Single Greatest Choice podcast. I'm your host, Katie B. You can learn more about me, this podcast, and the Single Greatest Choice coaching at my website, www.singlegreatestchoice.com, or find me on Instagram at single_greatest_choice. If you enjoyed today's episode, please take a minute to rate and review in iTunes. That helps more women to find our show. Until next time, I'm sending you all of my love and support as you go about making the choices that will create a life you love.